Look, I know you've heard this before in your hockey career. Just work hard, do your job, play your role. You've heard these common sayings before, but for most hockey players, these sayings are just things they hear and then they just kind of forget. I bet you've never really taken a step back and truly considered the impact of what I'm saying when I say, do your job, play your role. So before you write this off, let me explain how this can actually transform your hockey career by helping you understand how to actually improve your decision making, how to improve your training, and how to improve understanding who you are as a player. So at the end of the day, you play the way you want on the ice. So the first thing is, on every single hockey team, there is a coach who is trying to win hockey games. That's the baseline. That is what every team is trying to do. At least I would assume so. And the coach relies on his players to execute whatever the game plan is so that they can help him win. So he needs every single player to contribute to the team winning. That is the key. Otherwise, why would he put a player on the ice? The player must provide value or he's not going to put them on the ice. And of course, there's politics. Of course, there's hockey development that maybe a coach puts a player on just simply to help them improve. But for the most part, teams want to win over the course of a season. That's the goal, obviously. So a player provides value to a team by helping the team win. That is really what you are doing. And if a player doesn't help the team win, then that player is not actually valuable. Now, every player is unique, so each player is going to provide a unique asset to the team. That is really what a player is going to do at the end of the day. If every player was the same, well, then hockey would be pretty boring. The closest example to seeing this in an actual game is when we watch All-Star games. So when we watch an All-Star game, what you're going to see is a whole bunch of players who are all very similar in the sense of very offensive, very goal-oriented, very high risk typically, and this makes for a very high-scoring game with very minimal defense. And if coaches tried to build hockey teams like All-Star teams, they would not play very well because they wouldn't actually have players who could fulfill certain roles on that team. The reason teams actually have roles is because you need to be able to both go on offense and you have to be able to attack and play offensively. If you have an entire team who just plays defensively, you're not going to score enough. If you have a team who plays too offensively, then you're going to get scored on too much. So, how do we define a role? If you've heard this stuff before, I apologize. I'm going to go through it again because I want players to really understand these foundations so we can talk about how to actually master your archetype, how to understand the type of player you are, and how to be able to maximize that within a team. So, your role is the core responsibilities and expectations that a player has on his hockey team. This is what your coach or your teammates expects of you. Roles typically become more important as you move to later years of minor hockey into junior hockey, college and pro, but they aren't as big of a deal when you're younger. They simply play a part of it. And when you get up to the AAA levels, you're going to see this happen. But for the lower level leagues, and honestly, for most younger players, you're trying to really just develop your overall game. That's really the focus. Really, roles exist so that players aren't in a complete free-for-all. They're not just doing everything all the time. They have clear, distinct jobs and expectations that they can go out and execute and know if they're playing the game that their coach needs them to play. Roles help us actually make more effective decisions. Because when you know your role, and your role is to be a low-risk player, then you know when you make high-risk decisions, you are not aligning with your role. Same thing if your role is to be a shoot-first player, and you keep passing the puck away when you have a chance to shoot, you're not playing the role that you're expected to play. Now, not all teams have the exact same role requirements. Every team is unique in that way. That's because there's different players, there's different coaches, and then there's different strategies created by those coaches. So when it comes to role, there's three core components of how to break down your role in depth. So again, if you've heard this before, you're going to hear it again. So the three core components, number one is position, number two is the line you're on, and number three is your archetype. So position is the first component of role, and it gives a general outline of playing areas that you're going to typically be on the ice, situations that you're typically going to be in on the ice, and then the results you typically are going to be expected to produce. Most people understand what a player's position is, so we're not really going to go in much depth, but it does play a major role in shaping how players make decisions, and we don't usually think about this. For example, a forward's job in the defensive zone is different than a defenseman's job in the defensive zone. Same thing in the offensive zone, same thing in the neutral zone. Your position dictates where you should be on the ice, the type of plays you should make, the type of expectations that are put on you. Same thing with a center versus a winger. You have different expectations in all three zones, and therefore it influences the way that your mental software should be programmed. Now, the second component of role is your line. This is the line that you're on within a team. It's usually defined by the number line that you play on, and it typically shows you what your rank is on the team. So typically a higher line, so like line one or two, is higher than three and four, and vice versa. What this essentially means is that the higher lines are expected typically for more offensive roles, and the lower lines are typically more defensive or checking or simple roles. You can think of your line as an extension of your role because your line has a role and an expectation from the team. So in junior, your coach should tell you what your line's role is, but if he doesn't, then it's your job to ask questions until you fully understand what your line's role is. What are you expected to do? What are the results that you are expected to generate? Then once you understand what your line's job is or your line's role is, then you get into the more specifics of your own individual role. Now, the third component of your line or of your role is archetype. So your archetype is the general category or basically container that you're put in. And this is based on the patterns and the habits that you have when you play. This is given to you by scouts, by coaches, by teammates, and it really goes to highlight what's expected of you. It highlights what are you going to do on the ice. It highlights what do you need to do in order to be playing well and doing your job and playing your role. The key to thinking of your archetype is think of your archetype just like the archetypes in the NHL video game, right? So you have like a two-way, you have like a power forward, you have an offensive defenseman, you have an all-around defenseman, you have grinders, you have role players. And each of these archetypes has different strengths and weaknesses, different expectations, different X factors, different things that stand out, different things that hold them back. Now, no player has ever actually boxed into a specific archetype, but when you do play a certain way and you do get labeled with a certain archetype, it does lead to you basically developing a label in people's minds. This is what I call a hockey label. And what I mean by this is it's really a phrase or a name that's used to describe you as a player. It describes how you play on the ice typically. And it's used by the hockey world, but most specifically scouts and coaches to communicate you to other people. And it's a way for them to label them in your mind or in their mind so that they can make decisions on how you might fit into their team. So labels can very easily stick with players. And unless you make a dramatic change in your game in terms of your mind, body, or your skill, you're typically going to keep a label for quite a long time unless you go to a completely new place where no one knows who you are. And in a world with a lot of video, that's not going to be the case. So your hockey label is made up of a few core components. So you have your position, you have your line, you have your archetype, you have your identity attributes or your unique attributes or skills, and then you have your preferences, which are both offensive and defensive. That's how we categorize them in the hybrid development system. So for example, let's look at Nikita Kucherov and how most scouts and coaches seem to label him as a player. So he's a top line offensive winger with a playmaker sniper typically archetype. His identity attributes are elite passing, elite shooting, and you could even throw in hockey IQ in there too. He has a pass first preference. That's one of his strongest preferences. He loves to pass anytime he can. He's a very passive defensive player, so that's his preference there. He's more passive and timid. He's not as aggressive. He likes to wait. He likes to hold back. He doesn't like to make a ton of hits, and he's a stick check first preference on the defensive end. And here's the most important thing to understand when it comes to your label. People don't care about if you like your label because the way they see you is the way they see you. So if you want to change your label, you can't just complain about it. You have to actually change your habits. Then when you change your habits, you can actually make a shift in how people see you and perceive you. And this allows you to actually take control of the opportunities you get because the opportunities you get in hockey are based on the way people see you. And so this is where the 14 archetypes comes in. We've created a list of the 14 core archetypes that we've identified that I think will help you a ton in being able to see what type of player you are and be able to fit this into the strengths, the weaknesses you currently have, and then help you understand how you can fit into your team and what they need. Now, most players are a combination of different archetypes. They're typically 2 to 3. There's 7 for both forwards and defensemen. And so for forwards, we have the simple, reliable checker archetype. We have the defensive shutdown. We have the special team specialist. So this is power play, penalty kill, and also face-offs was one that I put in there. We have the two-way forward. We have playmaker forwards. We have power forwards. We have shooter sniper forwards. Then on the defensive side of it, we have simple, reliable, and checker defensemen. We have defensive shutdown defensemen. We have special team specialist again. So it can be PK or PP. We have disruptor defensemen. We have puck moving defensemen. We have offensive or shooter defensemen. And then we have all around defensemen. And if you're not watching the video, what you'll see if you're watching the video is that these are actually color-coded. The reason that there's colors is basically to describe the rarity of each archetype. Now, as you move down through this list, what you'll notice is that they go from being blacked out, and then you have bronze, then you have silver, then you have gold. The point is that as you get towards gold, it becomes more and more rare to find these players at each level. Now, the context with this is that at each level, you will find that there are players that could drop down levels and they could have a more rare archetype. So, for example, a fourth liner in the NHL could probably drop down to the East Coast League and be an elite shooter, for example. But they may have to be a simple, reliable checker in the NHL in order to fulfill a role that they're best suited for. And this has to do with just the fact that the pool of players that have high abilities is higher. There's more people to pick from. And this means that you have to compete against other high-level players, and eventually you may find that you have to alter your archetype. So this is why it's really important to understand that you're not just trying to be one specific archetype forever, but you're trying to expand the types of archetypes that you can play, meaning you expand your identity. This is massive. So the real value in knowing your archetype before we get into the specifics is that many players have all of the tools to be great, but they don't have the toolbox to put those tools into. And that's what the hockey archetype is about, is being able to look at the skills you have and create a unique stack of skills to create an archetype or a style of play that fits the team's needs, the role that you need to fulfill on the team. So an example of a player that has all tools but no toolbox would be, for example, a forward who has tons of size and tons of speed, but lacks the ability to drive the net, lacks the ability to play physical, lacks the ability to take hits, lacks the ability to be able to protect the puck. This is a player that has a whole bunch of tools, but then because they're lacking some and don't know how to put the ones they have together, that actually holds them back and they can't play the archetype that they're best suited for. Or take a defenseman, for example. A defenseman has great vision, great skating, great hands. They have all the tools to be a great all-round defenseman, which we'll talk about in a second. But he plays too defensive. He doesn't understand when to jump in the rush, when to play offensive, when to take risks, and ends up being a more defensive player when in reality he'd be better suited for a more all-around style. A lot of times when players ask me, well, why am I not getting ice time? Why am I struggling? The reason typically is because you have all the tools, but you're not putting them into a toolbox that your players, that the coaches can trust to really put you in. So now that you understand that you may have tools that allow you to play an archetype style, but you need to actually develop that archetype, get clear on it, understand how you are going to build that for yourself, and then understand how that's going to fit into your team, the systems, and the way your team really plays. So let's dig into the forward side of it. So the first one we have for forwards is the simple, reliable, and checker style forward. So these are the players who have to play physical. These are the guys who have to play simple and be trusted and earn the trust of the coach. Their job is to make it really a miserable time for the other team anytime they're on the ice. The goal for these players is to really gain an advantage when they're on the ice. They want to take the puck from the defensive zone, get it to the offensive zone, potentially protect the puck, maybe create some scoring chances. But really, it's about not getting scored on and allowing the other team to not be able to play their game. You want to focus on making plays with high success rate. So this means being able to chip the puck out offensively, being able to get the puck into specific areas that you know you can win for yourself and your teammates. But in order to move up the lineup, a player who has this archetype probably has to start to expand into other archetypes and really grow their game and grow their other abilities. But at the end of the day, these players are the ones who really the coach grows to trust and rely on if they do a great job in this role. Somebody who's a great example of this is like Matt Martin. Then we have a defensive shutdown forward, and Philip Deneau is a really good example of this. This is typically a role player, or at least what people would call a role player as well, but the context here is that it is a little bit different when someone plays a more defensive shutdown role because they're expected to shut down the best players on the other team. They have to make reliable plays, they have to make smart plays, but they have to be more defensive and intelligent about their defensive play. They're trying to make it hard for specific players, so they have to be really good at staying even. They're typically not trying to score more than the other team. They're typically trying to also not necessarily create positive shifts, but simply make it hard for the other team and shut them down and kind of come out of every shift more neutral or positive. But more neutral is the most important thing. Then you have special team specialists. So these are the guys like James Van Riemsdyk, for example, who specialize in actually playing on the power play, penalty kill, or faceoffs, for example. It's really good if you are somebody like this, just to understand the value that you bring when you have the specialty, but understanding you have to also have other archetype style in your game, or else you're not going to get much even strength time. Then you have two-way forwards. So this is like prime example would be Patrice Bergeron. Perfect guy to think of when it comes to really mastering a specific style of two-way play. This is somebody who is able to play well with other great players and understands the balance of not overdoing it on the offensive side, but also not playing too defensively either. And when it comes to two-way players, you want to be the guy who possesses the puck effectively. That's the most important thing. Possession, low turnovers, smart plays, and being able to create offense off of good defense. Then you have the playmaker forwards. So a playmaker forward is somebody who's able to make a lot of creative plays, somebody who's able to really be effective at possessing the puck, making tons of plays where they're deking a lot of players out. They like to look for the passes. Really, passing is the name of the game with this style. And playmakers really have to have that elite IQ, but they have to have that elite ability to possess the puck and place it into spaces. And somebody like a Nikita Kucherov does this very well because he's able to see where the play is going to go beforehand. He's looking to make quick one-touch passes, make really smart plays as much as he can. Then you have power forwards. So the Tkachuk brothers, both perfect examples of that power forward play. This is physical, making tons of good hits. This is playing fast. This is somebody who they just don't really fit any specific other archetype. They're not really a true sniper. They're not really a true shutdown or two-way. These are the guys that have that big body. They're able to play physical. They're able to make it hard for the other team. If you're somebody like this, this is somebody you want to look at these guys and understand the details of how they are able to leverage a lot of different skills and not really be anything specific. They're just able to play with that speed, power, and aggression and create a ton of offense off of that. Then finally, you have shooter snipers. This is the most obvious one. These are the guys who score a lot of goals, who make a lot of simple plays, and they're not simple plays. They make a lot of more complex, creative plays. But at the end of the day, their job is to shoot a lot. Their job is to score a lot. And these guys, you'll find they also typically become more of like a power forward and they have other elements of their game. But this is the main archetype when someone's expected to get open, get into pockets, find space, and then create a ton of shots. And typically these type of players have like a signature shot that they use. And that signature shot is something like Ovi or Stamkos. Stamkos is one timer, or Austin Matthews in the way that he leverages his abilities to do that kind of pull, drag in release that he does. Now let's get into defensemen. So you have the simple, reliable defensemen. And these are the guys who play really simple. They don't overdo it. They really play the kind of checker role, but on a defensive end. And I have Marc-Edouard Vlasic for this one. And the reason I picked him is just because it's his ability to really play simple, to not overplay, but still be effective. That's what makes a great defenseman. And what you're going to find with this is that these are the guys who make up most of a team. And really, this comes down to number one, the simple, reliable, and checker defenseman, and then the shutdown defenseman. Both of these are really kind of these role defensemen that most players play like. And the difference between those two is that shutdown or defensive defensemen really focus on really good defensive play and like to play against the best players. That's where you're best suited to playing against. So if you want to be that type of person, you have to master your skating, you have to master your intelligence, and not just be good at defending, but you have to be great at defending to kind of move into that next area. Then you have the disruptor defensemen. Disruptor defensemen are more, they make it really difficult to make plays in the neutral zone. They play physical. They create a ton of turnovers. They're always taking a little bit more risk than the defensive or the kind of simple reliables. That's why it's kind of its own category, because they create so much havoc and make it very difficult for the other team to enter their zone. Very difficult to create cycles because they're always messing it up through kind of an aggressive, very, very intense, fast style of play. Then you have the puck movers. So somebody like a John Klingberg, for example, great example of this. He's really good at being able to find the initial passes out on the breakout, find guys through the neutral zone and create stretch passes. And these are the type of guys where if you have them on your team, they're the super, super reliable guys who are always making everybody else look better. And they're not looking to shoot first. They're looking to pass first and do that in the basically all three zone. Then you have the offensive shooter defensemen. These are the guys who are the opposite of the pass first. They like to try to carry it as much as they can. They're always trying to join in the rush. They're almost like a fourth forward. And you can never have two of these guys together or else you're going to get a lot of goals scored against. And this is a guy like Brent Burns, who is just ripping the puck from everywhere, creating tons of offense. And somebody somebody who's really valuable to a team, but only if used effectively. And so you have to be careful if you are this style that you don't hurt your team. And then you finally have the all-around defenseman. So this is someone like a Victor Hedman, somebody who is able to play all of the archetypes and is very strong in all areas of the game and really just brings everything to the table. Can play power play, penalty kill, can shut players down, can play great offense, can play great defense, and really is able to just do it all. These are franchise defensemen. This is somebody you want to work towards being if you can. And typically these are bigger guys because at the higher levels, they have to take a lot of contact, play a lot of minutes. They have to be very durable. And so it's a very valuable asset to have, but be aware it's a very difficult skill set to build. And that's something you really have to work towards. And then finally, have a special teams defenseman. So someone like a Tyson Barrie, for example. These are guys who specialize in power play or penalty kill, sometimes both. And basically what these guys are able to do is, again, play in specific power play or PK situations and really just own that space. They may provide value in other areas, but that's their focal value that they provide to the team. And it is a huge asset because they have mastered that. These are the guys you need to have on a team if you want to score more, because other teams may just take penalties and not feel the threat. Or if you take a lot of penalties as a team, you have to have guys who can shut it down. So these guys are super valuable. And really, at the end of the day, the reason we're doing this, the reason it's valuable to understand your archetype again, is because you want to understand how you fit within your team and what is going to provide the most value. Because archetypes really come down to the types of decisions you make as a player. Now, you might be more hardwired to make certain decisions, but they can be altered. And really, these are like patterns. These are common decisions we make. And what we like to call them in the hybrid system is preferences. So there are decision preferences that you have. And think of the preferences like software. Just like you have software on a computer or a phone, so like the apps you have, that's really what you want to think of when it comes to the decisions. So if, for example, you like to make higher risk plays, and that's the more tendent, the thing that you do more often, then that's a tendency you have or a preference you have. And therefore, you have a high risk preference software. Versus a safety preference software. That would be kind of the two polar opposites. And so that's what we do with players when we work with them, is help them to understand how to actually reprogram their software to play the style they need to play, and also help them understand what is the style they're best suited for in the first place. So oftentimes players have a software problem. It's not that their ability sucks, it's that their decision-making doesn't align with the player they need to be or the player that they have the best abilities suited for. So if you change your software, you change the decisions you make, and you change the results you get, you change the label you get, and you get to have more opportunities and expand your role on the team. So it's a cycle that just keeps happening. Now we're going to dig a lot deeper into this in the next couple identity letters, and we're really going to get into the details of how to reprogram your software. But if you're interested in working with us and you really want to take this stuff to a completely different level, completely make an identity shift, change the archetype or improve or understand what you're best suited for, then feel free to send us a message or just click the link anywhere around this and we'll be able to help you out. I'll see you guys soon, and I hope this was a helpful podcast for you guys.